Chapter 52, The Shadow of the Past. In a little home in Forest, Mississippi, Donald Triplett still lives where he was born. The bedroom, kitchen, and bathroom are the only rooms in use, but that is all the home he needs. He doesn't play golf as much as he used to, and doesn't take as many trips as he'd like, but he is happy. And at 85 years old, his mother would no doubt be over the moon with how his life turned out. Outside of Callander, Canada, the bend where the Dion home and the Defoe nursery straddled the road presents but a trace of Quintland, what was once Canada's biggest tourist attraction. Long ago, their birth home was bought, moved, and turned into a museum. Over the past few decades, its ownership would continue to spark feuds over prospectors still eager to wring a few last dollars out of the Quintuplets' famous name. A nursing home is now located where their nursery and playground once stood, its residents probably unaware of the thousands of people that once pressed outside the barbed wire fences every day but for a glimpse of the Dion girls. Yvonne Leroux Dion, named in part after the nurse who helped deliver her, died in 2001 at the age of 67. She never married but followed her sister Annette into the convent before working as a librarian. Annette and Cecile, at 84 years old, still live together, preferring to spend their golden years in private. Occasionally, they will make a public appearance, often in an attempt to right a perceived wrong about their family story. The idyllic fantasy most envisioned about their existence has long been shattered, but for the many who grew up tracking their every milestone, seeing the two remaining Dion girls together brings them great joy. An old song on an old radio that takes them back to happier times. When Donald, Emily, Marie, Yvonne, Cecile, and Annette were born, the world had never heard of autism. It was more concerned with the bacterial infection striking down children everywhere. Garrotillo, Morbus strangulatorius. The scourge of diphtheria was raging in countries throughout the world, and although the previous iterations of antitoxin, or toxin-antitoxin shots, had put a dent in its assault, the crippling serum sickness they frequently caused had driven most parents away. The addition of potassium alum, then later aluminum hydroxide, promised to improve how well the shot worked while reducing the number of shots needed to one. The aluminum-precipitated diphtheria vaccine did work better, but unfortunately not with one shot. Three were still needed, a number which was later raised to four, then again to five. Diphtheria has ceased to be a threat in most first world countries due in part to the vaccine, but also to improvements to hygiene, sanitation, and the natural ebb and flow of the microbes which cause the disease. In developed countries, it could probably be removed from the childhood vaccine schedule and would never be asked for again. The pertussis shot, which had been added later after the addition of tetanus, is apparently not working well, even at five shots, and public health officials have begun hinting that a sixth may be necessary. A far cry from the single-shot promise the addition of aluminum was originally marketed under. Donald and the Dion quintuplets were likely the first children to receive the aluminum-containing diphtheria vaccine. We know the Dions received it and can safely assume that Donald did due to the omnipresent immunization campaigns in nearly every town throughout America at the time. Regardless, it was a dangerous addition that was largely untested. A few hundred children in Ireland received varying dosages of aluminum within experimental diphtheria shots, as did some in the United States. Many were orphans or otherwise institutionalized, the caring eyes and tender hearts of loving parents unavailable to notice and let doctors know that something had happened. Instead, those who administered the shots looked at the children's arms for redness, swelling, or signs of pain, the only concern about injecting aluminum at the time. If history is any guide, the parents' concerns would likely have been ignored anyway. Beyond the few days these children were monitored, any anxiety the medical community may have had about the new ingredient would quickly disappear. Since those two tests were administered in 1930, the medical and scientific community around the world has never again attempted to look at whether injected aluminum hydroxide, present in so many pediatric vaccines today, is actually safe. Despite the incessant pleading of parents the world over, not to mention an increasing number of physicians and scientists, those in charge of our children's health have turned a blind eye to the very real possibility that this single ingredient is the source of much of our suffering. In fact, they have doubled down and have moved in the opposite direction, insisting aluminum hydroxide to be so safe that it is for all intents and purposes an inert substance, the injection of which fully entitled to occupy the placebo column on any safety test for a new vaccine, a trial design which will never reveal its true danger. The criminal neglect of those public health officials put in charge of this travesty may one day be regarded as the most epic, cowardly failure ever perpetrated by humans. Never before in recorded history have so many depended on so few to protect them. For those few to ignore the incessant cries of those they have been called to defend for so many years is a tragedy in and of itself, a dereliction of duty so grave it will likely be written about for decades to come.